Again, my name is Nina LaBoy, and we welcome all of you here tonight. So this month, our focus has been on the movement from tranquility to happiness in the teaching of Transcendental Dependent Arising. And many of us have come to Buddhism seeking peace, wisdom, or freedom from suffering. I think most of us. Yet Buddha taught us something remarkable. The path of liberation matures with our practice through a sequence of wholesome conditions that naturally give rise to one another. Many beginners assume Buddhism is about trying to become happy. Well, the Buddha taught that genuine happiness arises from causes and conditions. The path to inner happiness is not chasing it directly. In the teaching of Transcendental Dependent Arising, as presented in the Upanishad Sutta, the Buddha teaches that suffering itself can become the condition for faith, faith for gladness, gladness for joy, joy for tranquility, tranquility for happiness. And happiness goes into concentration and then ultimately for liberating knowledge. And I've come to experience the primary function of the Dharma is to help overcome my vices, to cultivate virtues, and to find happiness. Now, the happiness I speak of is not ordinary pleasure. It's not excitement. It's not even sensory gratification. And this is a practice, not a philosophy. This happiness arises when the mind becomes free, even temporarily, from agitation, from craving, from resentment, or from fear. Cultivating this capacity within us means cultivating and having faith and confidence in the Dharma itself, of embodying mindfulness with regular, consistent practice. And that gives us insight into wisdom. It also means cultivating ethical conduct by living by precepts. And then dukkha can transcend, or suffering can transcend into happiness, and it merges naturally. So the five precepts, many of you remember, the first is refraining from taking life, and that means avoiding intentional killing any living being and cultivating compassion and respect for life. The second is refraining from taking what is not given. And this means not stealing, not cheating, not exploiting others, or taking advantage of others. Then there's refraining from sexual misconduct. And this means avoiding sexual behavior that causes harm, betrayal, coercion, manipulation, or exploitation. The fourth is refraining from false speech, which includes avoiding lying, malicious speech, harsh speech, or idle or harmful gossip. And the Buddha emphasized that truthful and beneficial communication is important. The fifth is refraining from intoxicants that cloud the mind. And traditionally, this refers to alcohol and intoxicating drugs that impair mindfulness and judgment. The Buddha explained that ethical conduct leads to freedom from remorse, which becomes a basis for joy and happiness. For me, freedom from remorse means freedom from guilt, guilt from the past, guilt from things that I've done. But by investigating what those things have been and how I can either improve my conduct and change it. The Buddha says, for one who is virtuous and free from remorse, gladness arises. From gladness comes rapture. From rapture comes tranquility. And from tranquility comes happiness. This is why the five precepts are directly related to transcendental dependent arising and its factor of happiness. We as practitioners, if we live ethically, we can experience a lighter heart, fewer regrets, and greater inner peace. It's about having enough. I say to myself, I've had enough of this suffering. I've had enough of this dukkha. The precepts are not restrictions. They're expressions of compassion. The first precept protects life. The second protects property. The third protects our relationships. The fourth protects the truth. And the fifth protects our awareness. Seen this way, the precepts are not merely rules, they're the practical path to happiness and the freedom that the Buddha described. Happiness and the steps in transcendental dependent arising are all a part of the path of the Four Noble Truths, especially the fourth, which leads to the cessation of suffering, of dukkha. It incorporates our practices of the Noble Eightfold Path. And of course, the bedrock, as I said, of the precepts we accept as practitioners of the Dharma. A source of spiritual happiness repeatedly praised by the Buddha is the happiness of ethical integrity and the bliss of blamelessness. When our actions are aligned with compassion and wisdom, the heart becomes lighter. It's easy to overlook ethical conduct, but we cannot seek happiness through meditation while neglecting our ethical conduct. When I'm feeling guilty, my mind rarely cannot be deeply calm. A blameless mind rests easily. The Buddha distinguished between sensual pleasures and spiritual happiness. He said there are two kinds of happiness, the happiness of household life and the happiness of renunciation. And of the two, the happiness of renunciation is superior. That wonderful monk, Venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi, has said that transcendental dependent arising is what the focus is on, eliminating our taints, our hindrances. So happiness is like a burden being put down. Imagine carrying a heavy load for many, many miles. I couldn't do that. And when I finally set it down, there is relief. And nothing new has been added, but something oppressive has been removed. This is very close to the happiness that the Buddha is described as spiritual happiness. When our tranquility deepens, the nervous system relaxes. Mental conflict subsides, and happiness naturally appears. And the Buddha taught that happiness emerges when the causes of suffering temporarily cease. We as practitioners can be sitting quietly and owning very little and experience profound happiness. We see it in many practitioners. We see it in the monks. The source is inner freedom rather than stimulation. The Buddha's happiness is often quiet and arises from a clear conscience. In Buddhism, the precepts are training principles undertaken voluntarily to cultivate harmlessness and mindfulness and wisdom. They're not commandments, as I said, but practices that help reduce suffering for oneself and others. When we keep the five precepts, we hurt fewer people. We lie less. We create less conflict. Many people skip this during meditation and wonder why meditation feels difficult. In Transcendental Dependent Arising, confidence in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha is not blind relief. It's trust born from experience. Those of you who may be beginners and even mature practitioners can see even small improvements. We have less anger. We have more patience. And we have greater mindfulness. And our confidence in the Dharma grows. And this confidence becomes the basis for happiness. Some of us, when we're practicing, we feel that it should feel grim and difficult and hard to get there. So I ask you today, right now, ask yourself, what is not wrong in this moment? Notice your body's breathing. Your awareness is functioning. There's absence of any immediate danger. And you have the opportunity to practice. Simply recognize the present sufficiently. Very often, a subtle well-being is already present beneath our habitual dissatisfactions. This practice is not creating happiness. This practice is noticing it. The Buddha praised a source of happiness as renunciation. And this can be intimidating to us. I mean, you know, I grew up a Catholic girl, and renunciation meant going to confession and having sins, being bad, you know. And many hear renunciation and think deprivation. But the Buddha meant this as freedom. Imagine holding a clenched fist for hours, and then imagine opening your hand. Renunciation is that opening, that letting go. Every moment of non-clinging creates and contains happiness. Notice what happens When you stop replaying an argument, I mean, I've done that. I replay an argument or something in the past that I visit over and over again. And that's creating dukkha. Notice when you stop defending your own opinion against others. Notice when you stop grasping for a particular outcome. Immediately there's relief. Not the happiness of getting what we want, but it's the happiness of not needing to hold on. As we will learn in the coming month, happiness will fold into concentration. You can't force concentration. A happy mind settles it. And this is why kindness and ethical conduct are so important. Happiness opens the door to insight. Many of us think wisdom comes through intellectual study alone. I was one of those. I love reading. I've learned a lot. But the Buddha taught that a settled and happy mind sees reality clearly. You have to have a settled and happy mind. The concentrated mind sees things as they really are, he said. When happiness matures, our agitation decreases, our cravings weaken, and our awareness sharpens. I mean, I can feel that. I feel that I've experienced that in my life because of the Dharma. I find myself more and more often thinking, did I say the right thing? Did I have to speak? Is this the right time? Our insight naturally develops, particularly with our practice. And as our mindfulness practice strengthens, another form of happiness emerges. Our minds become less scattered. I remember getting up every morning, going to work, and looking in the mirror and saying, okay, I'm going to say this to that person, and they're going to say this back, and then I'm going to say that, and this is how it's going to be. And I would do that almost every day. But since I've been practicing the Dharma, I don't do that anymore. At least, not as frequently. But I noticed how I'm happier, and I feel more confident that I could just go ahead and with my day after maybe sitting for a while or being more reflective or being more kind at work and thinking about what my intentions are. This is the kind of happiness that leads beyond happiness. And this is perhaps the most profound point, that transcendental dependent arising doesn't end with happiness. The sequence will be continuing. Happiness and concentration, knowledge and vision, disenchantment, dispassion, and liberation. With happiness as condition comes concentration. The purpose of spiritual happiness is not merely to feel good. It serves as a bridge towards our awakening. Even the most sublime happiness is not the final goal. The goal is liberation from all suffering. The Buddha's revolutionary insight was that happiness is not something to acquire from the world. It's something that unfolds inside when the causes of suffering are gradually removed. So as practitioners, we cultivate generosity and virtue, mindfulness, confidence, and our meditation practice. And we begin to discover happiness that is independent of circumstances. As the Buddha said, one who delights in Dhamma sleeps happily with a peaceful mind. This happiness is not the end of the path, but it is one of the clearest signs that our hearts are moving in the direction of freedom. The factor of happiness in transcendental dependent arising teaches us a vital truth. Awakening is not built in struggle alone. It unfolds through wholesome conditions that nurture our hearts. And when tranquility deepens, happiness arises. When happiness arises, then concentration will follow. And when concentration matures, reality is seen clearly. And from clear seeing comes liberation. The Buddha's invitation is not merely to understand happiness intellectually. It's to know directly that happiness comes from ethical living, from letting go, from collected awareness, and freedom from craving. As the Buddha taught, there's no happiness higher than peace. May we cultivate the causes of tranquility. May tranquility mature into happiness. May happiness support our deep concentration. May concentration reveal things as they truly are. And may that seeing culminate in complete freedom for the welfare of all beings. Thank you. Thank you. So, what are your reflections on that? Any comments or how's your practice going? Or what do you think about happiness? If you're online, just put your hand up. Kathy. Hi, Kathy. I can't hear her. One moment. Oh, you're on mute.
Okay, I think I'm unmuted now. Thank you for your talk. I felt so eloquent and sensible. I really got a clear feeling from what you're saying that orient me toward not trying to change anything in the conditions around me. It's about me seeing things as they really are. Have I got that right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, what is it then when you don't like what you see? What would that be?
Well, when you don't like what you see, I mean, I would think that develops an agitation or an aversion within yourself. I know that that's what happens to me And that has happened to me. I mean, I've told that story when I was just to our group and I was just so angry. But then I remembered my practice. And so I investigated. I thought, okay, why am I angry? Why? And I was able to think that through and realize that those that I had anger against were really innocent, that I didn't need to be angry at them. And with that, I was able to feel metta for them, which brought me joy. And eventually there was rapture, because I was so happy that I could change this anger and aversion in me. And then a calm settled, which came into a happiness. Happiness that the Dharma, that I experienced the Dharma and what it truly means.
Yeah. So I'm not going to get too worked up about changing other people or the conditions around me.
Right.
Okay. Thanks, Nina.
I know. Yeah. That's the work. That's the practice. Thank you. Thank you, Kathy.
In the sangha that I've been practicing, and I can't remember what the thing is we chant, but there's one line that says, that ends by saying, "May all beings be happy." And first of all, I love your talk because it, you know, expressed what that happiness means. But for me, it was always, well, happiness, it's kind of a nebulous thing. And I always said, I thought, oh, what I would do is change it to, may all beings be at ease, be calm. Mm-hmm. But I think you did a good job. But the idea of actual happiness, like, you know, has always been difficult for me. So I don't know.
Oh, no, I could totally understand that. And some of us also, you know, myself too, I think of this inner happiness as contentment. Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. Anyone else?
Just following up on what you said, that for me, I use the language of not resisting what is. There is that kind of contentment or ease that just stop arguing with what is already here. It doesn't mean that I don't have agency to do some things, for there are things that can be changed and I work at that, but not that argument with it, because it's already here. You know, there's a kind of logic that comes from a contentment of a being with things as they are without being ticked off about it. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes the English words that we use from the Pali are challenging, like you were saying. So I like the contentment or the just stop arguing with what is. Mm-hmm. It feels, once I stop arguing, that contentment's right there. So I don't know if you want to say any more about the language stuff and all that.
No, I totally agree. I think that, I mean, you know, these the Buddha's words were in the Pali and Sanskrit, and the translations are difficult. Because we've grown up in a different conditioned world. You know, we really haven't grown up in this society, in a world where, you know, we really are contemplating mostly inner happiness. Or, and yes, we get it from religions that we grew up with, but still, the language translations are difficult at times, and happiness can be contentment, as you said, or ease, or so. And then your point about being okay with what is, that's another condition that we've had. Our conditioning here is cultivating competition, or, you know, we have to have the best, or, you know, we're bombarded day and night with ads about what's going to make us happy. And, you know, so then we have a lot of crave. We develop cravings for different things. It could be anything. It could be a new refrigerator. It could be that we don't need. It could be food. You know, it could be trying to change someone's behavior. But when we embody those things, it causes us suffering because it's not what we want. So the practice is to develop that you can't change things. You don't have to fix everything. You don't have to want everything, because that is not, doesn't develop the capacity for inner happiness. And that's why we're here, I believe. And eventually, freedom and liberation from suffering.
Thanks for the great Dharma talk. I think one thing I'm kind of a little bit wondering, which is kind of about the idea of, like liberation from like having this like feeling of, like, for example, I really want something and then I just can't get it. And then, like, you know, the feeling of like, oh, I like what I've noticed is that, for example, I've been on a road trip, right? And then I've planned a lot about going to this, like, you know, this hot spring, right? And then suddenly on the day I go there, it got closed. And I noticed that the more time you spend preparing or thinking about it, right, the more anger you get, like, when you realize that you don't get this. Like, for example, if I spend a lot of time doing this experiment and then it failed, you know, I get more angry. So I don't know if, like, what you sort of do, I guess, during meditation to sort of, like, I guess, I don't think neutralize is the right word, but sort of, like, sort of get to that point of, like, rapture of, like, you know, just liberation. Do you sort of, like, meditate on that object, or do you, like, just sort of let that, like, object sort of, like, go into your mind and just not react to it? Like, the practice of that, does that bring you liberation, or is there something else going on?
Well, I that's a great question. I believe that it's not having an expectation. And you know, and you have to practice it. It doesn't come very easily. You know, it comes after practice, not having an expectation. And then when you're disappointed, it's to really think about what that means. Can you do something else? Is it really that important to your well-being? Is, you know, so it's like trying to cultivate more about how you can be more, as this young man said, at ease with whatever happens. Whatever happens. Okay, you want to go. And I can understand that. I mean, you know, I was on vacation and myself, and, you know, I wanted to do certain things, but I didn't get to do them. But it was like my practice has helped me to not hold on, not to be grasping, not clinging to an outcome. And that has really helped. And I hope that you can practice more.
Yeah, I think that sounds great. So sort of like having that, coming into like practice thinking that, like, I'm not going to expect anything, or, you know, and then that kind of keep that as like sort of a, I don't know, like, what's the right word for it, like a meta, or like some, like sort of a phrase that you're going to kind of keep throughout your day, set an intention for that, I guess, right?
Right, yeah.
Great. Thanks.
You're welcome. Yeah. Anyone else? Anyone online?
Thank you. No one else said their name, but I'll say my name. My name's Jamie.
Hi, Jamie.
Hi. Yeah, and I guess what Suze said reminded me, I feel like, of like when I find contentedness, I feel like I don't find it. It sort of like arises, and it sort of comes out of that, like, yeah, not being in contention with something. I've heard that, like you were talking about translations, I've heard that dukkha is often translated as something that is hard to bear. And I feel like for me, practice when I'm like going through difficulty in my life of, you know, something that I don't want to happen happening is like, oh, can I like bear this, you know? Like, mm-hmm. can I actually feel this? Mm-hmm. And getting really used to just like feeling that emotion of like, you know, like how that person said, like, oh, I made all of these plans to go to this hot spring and now it's not happening. You know, like, can I feel this like disappointment or this like sadness? And then I feel like by like being able to feel that, then I can, it like makes space for like when contentedness comes along, like it's just there, you know? And it's like I've allowed to, it kind of surprises me. I'm just like, oh, I didn't even know that this was possible. I was just like tense and sad and grieving about all this other stuff. But like before, I feel like I would, yeah, just be so in contention with the way that things were, you know, mm-hmm. not able to bear the dukkha or that which is hard to bear, you know, it's just like fighting against it. But then I feel like once I've just allowed myself to feel emotions basically and give them the space to like breathe, then things like contentedness, yeah, just kind of like float along.
Thank you. That's wonderful. I, you know, it's like, and that's when feeling the joy. That's joy. That's part of that contentedness. And I like that phrase. It's things that are hard to bear. I haven't heard that one. That's good. Thank you. Well, we have one more person. Oh, two more people, and I think we have to go soon, don't we? Kathy.
Hi, thank you for the wonderful, wonderful talk. I just could feel freedom kind of moving in me. So I appreciate that. My question, and I'm an extrovert, so I'm not going to know what I want to say until it comes out. So the Buddha taught suffering and the end to suffering. And I guess when I hear the goal is the end of suffering, it seems like it's an individual thing in our own practice. And I know that it has to be, when we talk about doing this practice for the benefit of all beings, there's that communal piece. But we live in such an individualistic society that I wonder sometimes if Western Buddhism is just all about relieving that the common way of facing this is to just be, this is about my own individual, being free of suffering. And I'm just wondering, I don't know if that makes sense, but I'm wondering if you could speak to that. And I've always thought that the spiritual path was, for me, was to develop this deep capacity for compassion, to be able to show that compassion to others, which I think is in alignment with what you've talked about.
That's a very good question. And but the Buddha also taught that, I mean, even though from your words, yes, we've been conditioned to be you know, just mainly think about ourselves and individuals. But the Buddha taught interdependence, and that is a truth. Science proves it besides the Buddha. We know that it's true. So in order to help alleviate suffering, we have to work on ourselves, yes. To help alleviate, we have to understand and recognize what the dukkha is that we go through, that what others go through. So that is a practice. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, thank you. The interdependence is crucial.
Yes.
Absolutely crucial. So thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, Deborah, you're our last person.
Yeah, I was, thank you for this evening. I was very surprised in myself, and instead of the connection between happiness and other strong emotions, when you gave the suggestion, Ty's suggestion, put a smile on your face. I smiled, and that radiated through my whole body, but it brought tears to my eyes. And it was like happiness and sadness and grief and is all connected. It's all about being aware of what's really there. And then I was like, why does this happen? And it made me think of a line in a movie not too long ago where a character felt happy that he was able to experience sadness. Yeah. And I think that little suggestion, put a smile on your face. Yeah. This can lead to so many connections. Thank you very much.
Good. Yes. Yes, what you're saying also reminds me of a saying that Joseph Goldstein says. He says, don't waste your dukkha. With that, I will end. Thank you so much for being here tonight.